Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. Today I'm in the garden with Eric Dyer, a world-class football player, plays for England and has 49 caps, and who has been with Tottenham Hotspur for 9 years. His garden is becoming established. He started it around 3 years ago, but it is already taking shape. So, Eric, it's extraordinary. This garden, you've only been here for, what, 3-4 years?
Yeah, 3-4 years.
Looking so established. When I think, you know, you're such a young age, you're not even 30 yet, are you?
No.
And when I think King Charles, he started Highgrove when he was like 33.
Yeah.
You've got the head start on him, haven't you?
Yeah, maybe the head start. I know my knowledge still isn't great, I don't think, but I think I know what I like. And yeah, we planted this actually during lockdown. I remember I planted pretty much all of this myself during lockdown, and I remember what it looked like to begin with. And obviously I was very new to it at the time, so I was thinking it looks extremely bare and empty, you know. And to look at it now is amazing.
It does look very well established, doesn't
yeah.
it? And what I love about it is, as opposed to Prince Charles or King Charles's Highgrove, this is very much outward looking, isn't it? You can see the beautiful countryside floods into the garden.
Yeah.
And the way you've done the farm, when I first saw this, before you started converting it, they were really modest farm buildings, weren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah.
But it doesn't look... It just looks amazing now, doesn't it? The way, the tweak with the architecture and the way the garden relates to the house,
yeah.
it just is stunning, isn't it? It's yeah. just sort of low-key but stunning.
Yeah, we tried, I think we tried to like create like three different sections. So like you have the walled garden, we call this the walled garden, and it's a bit more manicured and well taken care of. And then you kind of go like one phase out of that to the orchard, which is still well taken care of and quite manicured, not as much as the walled garden. And then past the orchard you then have, well, you know, fields and farmland, which is a lot less manicured. So we kind of have like three phases, I feel, which I think is really nice. And then once you get out there, we didn't want to be too delicate with the farmland itself, and it's very much just farmland, fields, animals. So I really like how it sort of transitions naturally to the farm fields at the end.
Yeah, I think it does it brilliantly. And of course, there's that massive avenue.
Yeah.
That plants from, that you see from the kitchen table, and it goes yeah. right out to the
yeah.
field. So it really pulls your eye out.
Yeah, the avenue, obviously that was all you, and we planted that in lockdown, my brother and I. We planted those trees. That was like, those are my first experiences. This walled garden and the trees, that was my first experiences of planting something myself. So
and you'd never planted a tree before that?
No, never. Those are my first. Those are my first. Those trees there. And as you said, that avenue is incredible, because you can see it literally from the kitchen island. You look out and you can see all the way to the end. And I tried to follow all your rules, the distances between the trees, getting a bit shorter the further away, so it gives a bit of an optical illusion, and it also narrows in a little bit from the beginning to the end to make
yeah.
it look even further. And so we did that, and I got married at the end of that avenue last year, so now it's very special.
So did Anna walk up?
No, she didn't walk
up
the whole way. It would have been a long way. There was like a reception here in the walled garden, and then Anna walked Anna drove half the way and then got out, because I think it would have been a tough long walk.
In shoes, proper
yeah,
shoes would be
exactly.
very difficult.
Exactly.
But you didn't also mention the little sauna garden, which I think is
yeah.
really cute, isn't
yeah.
it? And then also the other little courtyard with the water feature in.
Yeah.
So you've got you've got really, it's like five different little spaces and yeah. then this amazing landscape.
Yeah, yeah. Honestly, the little courtyard by the entrance, that garden, that's probably my favorite of all of them. I love, for some reason, I really love that area. I love the little water feature and some of the plants, which are, I think you know me, Bunny. I don't know the names of any plants, but
you will do soon.
The plants, I know what I like, and those plants in there I really like. So I really love that area. And we did that one afterwards, actually, and it's grown really nicely as well.
And I have to say, a lot of my clients will say, I want to plant big. And they get out their checkbooks and we move in massive trees. But the way you've done it, planting small, yeah. I always think is the best. Yeah. They're much less expensive, they're established better, they look better at the end of the day. Yeah. And I think that's so wise. It amazed me. When I first met you, I just thought it was unusual to have a footballer that wanted a nice garden. I don't know if I'm just prejudiced, but I imagine it was sort of hot tubs, AstroTurf, things like that. But actually, there's a load of you, aren't there? A load of footballers who are mustard keen gardeners.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I don't know tons, but I think there's a few.
Hector Bellerin,
big gardener.
Yeah. He plants 3,000 trees. You ought to beat him, Eric.
Okay.
3,000 trees every time Arsenal wins.
Wow.
Now, if you had planted 3,000 trees every time Tottenham had won, we'd have forests in the country.
I think. I don't even know if we've hit 100 yet here. Maybe 100.
Oh, you must have
maybe
hit 100,
yeah.
And with the ones you've got coming shortly, I think you'll
certainly
will.
Yeah, we've got a big
weekend
planned.
And then David Beckham loves his bees, doesn't he? And then Ben White.
Okay.
His dad's a gardener.
Okay,
and
okay.
And he always says...
You're teaching me, Bunny.
He always says if he hadn't been a footballer, he'd be a gardener, but it would be
okay.
A top gardener. Because
okay.
Obviously you're competitive, aren't you?
Yeah, very
all
competitive.
All you footballers. But you can't be competitive in the garden. Can
no,
you?
Well, that's one thing that's really, I think, is really nice about gardening. It's definitely difficult for me because I'm very impatient by nature. And you asked me yesterday to think about things that I've learned from gardening or like tips that I would give. And obviously, being very impatient, gardening has taught me to be patient because you have to be patient with the plants and prepare well before you plant. I think there's so much in the preparation that at the beginning was very difficult for me when I was planting those trees over there.
Yes.
I just wanted to just put them in the ground, you know, and forget about the prep. But I've learned that the preparation is very important and patience is very important. And like you said, we obviously started with much smaller baby plants. And I think that's really, I actually think it's really nice because you go on a bit more of a journey with them and you've got to really take care of them. And I really enjoy watching them grow like that avenue. It's nice now to see how big and established they are. It gives you a real pleasure.
And I think when you put them in, you're impatient. You think, oh, those tiny sticks. But then they obviously grow faster each year. So every
yeah.
year they grow more and more.
Yeah.
And then in 10 years' time, you think, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and then it really... So I always think if you start a garden, it's nice to get all the planting you can in as early as possible.
Yeah.
And the hard stuff can go in later if you
can't
do it all at once.
Yeah.
What always amazes me, when you hear about people who want to become a footballer, obviously I would think every young boy under 10 wants to be a footballer.
Yeah.
But you went out to Portugal at 7, and then when were you spotted? When did they pick you up?
So when I was 8, I started playing for Sporting Lisbon. That's my club, the club I made my professional debut for.
So they just asked you, or you were a member of the club little boy
just,
could be?
Honestly, there's I could tell you so many times during my career where, like, obviously luck plays a huge part and making... Oh, I'm a huge believer in making your own luck as well. I don't think it just comes naturally, but I was at school, my PE teacher at school, he knew someone from at Sporting's Academy, so he got it. He obviously saw something in me when I was playing in PE and whatever.
So your
at
PE
school.
Teacher picked it up, but you weren't kicking balls in PE. What?
Yeah, we sometimes we play football in PE or different.
Yeah,
PE is
right.
Like exercise class. No,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
PE.
But when we did PE, no one would have said, "Oh, Bunny, you're going to be a footballer."
I know. Yeah, I know. Luckily, he did know someone there. He was the one that made it happen, and then I went there for like a week of trials, and then Sporting asked me to stay. That was when I was eight. Yeah. Wow. And then, then I just made my way through the age groups at Sporting.
And at eight, were you really excited by this? Did it really, my God?
To be honest, I was eight. So first of all, I didn't really know the size of Sporting as a club, how big of a club it was, how special their academy was. Because obviously I was English and I was 8 years old, so I didn't really know. And over time, I started to learn. And I just loved playing football. I wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to become a footballer when I was 8 years old. But and then obviously you just progress through the age groups, and the further along you go in the age groups, the more and more serious it becomes, and the more and more it becomes like that something might come of this. And when I was 13, they wanted me to come and to go and live at the academy.
So they realized by 13 you were special?
Yeah, to them, yeah, I was. And because when you're living in the area, lots of kids from all over the country would live at the academy, but not kids in the area. They would just travel in. But there were some people that they obviously saw something special in, that they would want to come and live at the academy because it was just easier for you to go to school and you could train more, all of those things. So they asked me to do that, and thankfully my parents were okay with it and I wanted to do it. So then I went and lived there full time.
So you left your parents, so they came back to England?
No, they were in Portugal, but I just left home.
Right.
And lived at the academy, and then I'd go home on weekends. So yeah, I was just playing football, and that's when I started going to Portuguese school as well. And so as the age groups go, you it becomes more and more of a reality that it can happen, and you start to hit milestones, and all the way until you're 18, 19, it can be something that might happen but might never happen. So it's very small details, and luck is needed. I remember I made my debut for Sporting because two right backs who that wasn't even my position, but two right backs in the first team got injured, and from 1 week to the next, suddenly I made my debut because of that. And
wow.
And
luck.
Yeah.
Well, not really.
Exactly. Yeah. So obviously, there's that luck again. There was two injuries, and I made my debut, and I played well in my debut. And then you need some luck to get chances sometimes, and then it's about taking that chance.
And your dad, he was a tennis pro, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He played tennis when he was younger. Yeah.
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 To a really high level.
Yeah.
And your mother's really successful as well, isn't she? I always think she's extraordinary because she does these high-powered jobs. So she was a lawyer, wasn't she, a barrister? And then she switched.
Yeah.
And she's now currently doing hospitality for the Paris Olympic Games.
Yeah. No, she's I don't know where she gets the energy from, because she has time for so much, and she puts so much into so many things, like this house and this garden as well, and her grandkids and her kids. And then obviously she's now working on the Paris Olympics, and she worked on Euro 2004 and the America's Cup, the sailing as well. And and in between that, she worked for David Chipperfield, the architect. So that was kind of where my love, I think, it's definitely from my mother where I got my love for architecture and design and gardening, and then obviously the house and the building and the gutting of the house and rebuilding and all of those interests I got from her. Yeah.
And that really shows, doesn't it? You know, the color scheme, the proportion of the rooms inside, how it relates. I just could not believe it when I saw this finished as to what she started with.
Yeah.
She's got a superb eye. She's really into art.
Yeah.
But like you, she's obviously huge, highly geared, but she comes across as very laid back. And in your football, you always, apart from that rather emotional moment when your brother was being beaten up or something in the stands.
No, I wasn't being beaten up, but yeah.
Well, I don't normally follow football, as you probably realise, but I did hear about that because you leapt over the hoardings or whatever they are around the pitch and leapt to his defence. And that was the first time. I've always thought of you as very cool, very calm. And then we had this, but obviously you're not, to get where you are.
Yeah.
You know, you've got 49 caps or something. So that's extraordinary balance, isn't it? And that probably what makes you so good, because you could be on the knife edge half your life you do, but you're not.
Yeah, obviously, I think I think that does come from both my parents. They're very relaxed, and I think they probably had to be to have six kids, you know, and to manage the situation of having six kids, and obviously knowing us as kids, we definitely weren't easy, especially my brothers and I. So
in what ways weren't you easy? What, you fought a lot?
Yeah, we're extremely, all three of us are extremely competitive to this day. We're extremely competitive, at whatever we're playing, and
from Monopoly to football.
Oh,
to
anything, anything. I don't get as competitive at anything than playing games with my brothers, really, I don't think. So
sort of Scrabble is a combat sport in the Dyer household.
Pretty much, yeah, pretty much. There'll be a broken board every now and then, and whatever it is. So obviously, I think that's a quality to have as well. I think they instilled that competitiveness in us at the same time. So I think that my mum's very calm, and she's very calm in a storm, and I think I probably get that from her.
So gardening in Portugal, so you now have a place in Portugal, don't you?
Yeah.
And how do you compare gardening in Portugal to gardening here?
Well, my place in Portugal is not, we're building it, so it's not finished yet. I haven't done any gardening there yet, but I'd say obviously the huge difference is the climate is incredibly different where I'm building. It's actually, the one thing it does have in common with here, which probably you can hear, is the wind. It's quite windy there as well. But the climate's very different. It's obviously extremely dry in the summer. In Portugal, we always say when it rains, it pours. You get heavy rain in Portugal, but you don't really get a constant drizzle for 4 or 5 months like you get here. So I think the climate is really the biggest difference, yeah.
So when you were gardening, and that it slows the pace down, doesn't it?
So, yeah.
So something like planting those trees, and you've got, I don't know, 60 trees to plant.
Yeah, yeah.
So do you think, oh my God, this is hard work, or do you relish the thought, or do you start the job and find it daunting and then settle into it?
No, I love the physicality of it, because it feels like I'm getting a workout in. I think there's kind of a few things you can get it in, like... I play a lot of golf, and when you go and play golf for 4 hours, you're not really thinking about anything, and I find the same thing with gardening. I can be out there all day, and it's kind of like a meditation, because you don't think about anything other than what's right in front of you. So the mental side of it and the physical side, I enjoy both. I like how physical it is sometimes, and I love how peaceful it is for my mind, because when I'm doing it, I'm not really thinking about anything else.
And it's satisfying, isn't it? Because you feel you've really achieved something.
Yeah, it's hugely satisfying. As you said, just like seeing this garden now and the trees and everything, the vegetable garden, like taking care of something and watching it grow is is incredibly satisfying. And, I laugh saying it because I never thought that this would be me, you know, that I'd be doing this kind of thing when I was younger. But it is incredibly satisfying to take care of something, and the effort that you put into taking care of it, the amount you have to... You know, there are lots of places here where we don't have irrigation systems in. So in the summer, we'll be out there watering it ourselves in the morning, in the evening. So putting that kind of effort in and watching something grow is incredibly. It feels good, you know. It feels like you're accomplishing something.
It's funny, isn't it? Because when I started horticulture, you know, maybe 50, 60 years ago. It was definitely not cool to be in, you know, when I did my horticultural degree, people said, what are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
And, but now I think more and more people are understanding, and it is becoming cooler, isn't it? I think it's lost that status that you have to have a blue rinse in order to dig in the ground.
Yeah.
And people like you doing it, I think is fantastic, because I think the earlier you get switched into it, the better it is, isn't it? You pick up more and benefit from it.
Yeah, really? I feel like we fell into it a little bit, because when I was looking for somewhere in this area, I definitely wasn't imagining something as big as this in terms of the land and the house. I was thinking about something a lot smaller, something just to escape the city a little bit. And then obviously, it's quite typical of me, ended up with a lot more than I could chew off, and ended up here. And then... So we kind of fell into it a little bit, and then obviously picked it up, and definitely grew a interest in it and a love for it, and the plants and the animals, both things we're learning on the go. but I love to do it. So it's incredibly, it feels incredibly rewarding to me. Yeah.
I think we all learn on the go, to be honest. You know, even my horticulture degree and stuff, there's nothing like actually doing it.
Yeah.
Because you learn your way, and your way might be different from the book, but for your soil, your microclimate, and for you, it works.
Yeah.
And
well, that's funny, because when I was with you a couple of weeks ago here, I spoke to my mum afterwards, and I always find it funny because some things, that they are just like so simple, because sometimes I ask you, oh, can we plant this here, or can we do this? We were talking about that road there, if we could plant in it. And I'm expecting, lots of times I'm expecting a complex, difficult answer from you, where it's going to be complicated, and so many times you surprise me, because you just say, oh yeah, you can just dig there and plant in there, it'll be fine.
And that's that big, quite well, it's a very utilitarian barn, isn't
it?
And in front there's hardcore, and that when you come round the corner, that's the first thing you see. And I always think the biggest, ugliest stands out the most. And we have planted in hardcore trees so many times. And people think you should dig out trenches. But what worried me is you then, being you, got out the pickaxe straight away and flung it in the ground with no eye thing. And I thought, my God, he's gonna get a stone in his eye and he won't be able to get the
gold.
Well, do you
know what? I didn't tell you this. We were very lucky, because when I was telling this to my mum afterwards, she said, oh, you must be careful, because there's piping that goes from there across to the swimming pool with the water pipes. And I was like, And we didn't know about that at the time, but I literally could have burst one with that pickaxe. So luckily we didn't.
Whoops. Yeah, I should have said, because normally when we're doing something, we check the underground services.
Yeah.
But one time we did, with a digger, go right through in a mains cable to a huge block of flats, and we had an explosion 3 stories high.
Oh, wow.
But they had put it in much too shallow, so it was not my fault.
Okay.
But back to the health thing, I'm interested in this, because I imagine you must be fitter than anyone I know.
Okay.
You know, you train 4 hours a day, do you?
No, like, we're outside maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours, 4 hours maybe in total of everything that we do a day, yeah.
Wow. And that would be aerobic, would it mainly? Or?
Aerobic, and then strength, and so you'd be in the gym before training, then you go outside where it's definitely more aerobic, and then some days back in the gym afterwards, which is obviously more strength or flexibility or something along those lines.
But so when you come in from planting the avenue or wielding a pickaxe,
yeah,
are you, oh my God, I've got, do you find different muscle groups go?
No, definitely, especially the lower back sometimes. Definitely the lower back, I think, is the main one. But it's funny though, when I do, I always say, like, during lockdown was one of the periods where I felt that physically I felt the fittest I'd ever felt.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. Really, I really felt physically very good in that period. Obviously, it wasn't just farming and gardening. Obviously, I was training as well. But people talk about farmer's strength, and I really do feel like that is a thing, having done some myself.
Because you see the job and you get stuck into it, don't you? I think it's quite different.
Yeah.
And it's usually a massive job, isn't it? You know, planting a lot or weeding.
Yeah,
a
it's a long day. You're outside all day doing it. So
and you forget the calories and the time.
Yeah.
And that's why it is. I mean, I was amazed when someone said to me, 3 hours of gentle gardening is equal in calorie intake to an hour intensive in the gym.
Okay.
Because you feel an hour intensive in the gym, but you don't really notice.
Well, exactly, yeah. I think if you're in the garden for a whole day, I think your heart rate is constantly up at it's up somewhere, not extremely high, but it's, your heart rate is definitely up there for an extended period of time. If you're non-stop for 4 hours in the morning, 4 hours in the afternoon or something, then your heart rate is up there at a medium level for a long period of time, which I'd imagine can only be good for you.
So, bearing in mind that we gardeners are not in tune with our bodies like you are, and we do this, and we have the lower back problems.
Yeah.
What would you tell us that we should be doing, that you know to do, to look after your body?
I don't know if I do it well, but I mean, the most important thing, I think, is in gardening, is to use your legs, to not be bending from the hip, to be bending your legs.
So when you're crouching down to weed, you won't go like
exactly,
that.
Exactly. And I think that's where you get all your, if you hinge from the hips, I think that's where you get all the back problems. Whereas if you're bending from your legs and squatting down to pick things up, or to dig or whatever it might be. I think the most important thing is to make sure you use your legs, yeah.
And your core muscles, presumably. Core presumably muscles. Your core muscles never stop, do they? Are they always fixed there?
I think I'm okay there, yeah. So for me, the biggest thing is the hinging from the hips and putting strain on my back and using my legs, yeah.
That's really good. You see, I always used to think if you bent from your hips, you'd have a nice, fine waist. But maybe you're right. I'm sure you're right. You were the one that got me into saunas.
Okay.
Tell me about your thoughts on saunas.
I don't know how it started. Obviously, we got one here, and I think that's probably, that's where it started. Yeah, just the combination of the sauna and the ice bath, that's something I've done for 3 or 4 years now, and it's a daily thing for me. I'm completely addicted to it. I like suffering in the sauna, like staying in there, you know, and sweating and trying to stay in there for as long as possible. I love that bit of it. I love the way I feel afterwards. I love the way it makes me sleep, because normally I do it in the evenings and it puts me to sleep. The way my body feels, for me it covers like every aspect, mentally, physically, emotionally. I just love it. And then obviously with the ice bath as well. I normally go in the ice bath before and after, and sometimes go in and out between the sauna and the ice bath, and I just think hot and cold, extreme hot and extreme cold, are so good for you. So yeah, it's something that I've just become addicted to, and I do it every day. There's, apart from like the day of a match, there's not a day I don't go in there. And one time it was broken, and I was living with my brothers, and we're used to doing it every day. And one time there was like a week where it was broken, so we weren't in there for a week. And honestly, you it sounds ridiculous, but we really felt it. We really felt like, having done it every day, having to miss it for a week, it felt like you were, you know, hot cold sweats. It felt like you were an addict to something, because
wow.
we were missing it so much. I really felt like I wasn't the same without it. It sounds extreme, but that really was how I felt. So yeah, it's just something I've just been completely addicted to.
I saw the research, because your mum sent me the link on it, and it is amazing, isn't it, for heart disease. It's like all causes of death, the reduction, it's something like 70%.
Yeah, I don't think there's loads of research, but I think the one my mum sent you is that there is some research in Finland that they did.
Oh, East Finland University.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, over 20 years or something, they've monitored people.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I sent that to my dad as well, but he's still refusing to, he's too stubborn, he's refusing to get in the sauna, but...
I bought one of those little domes, much cheaper version than yours, and I find it amazing. So, your lovely dog has put her nose into this bucket. Now, how many people come to you, Eric, and say, I bought you a bucket of muck?
You're the first. You're the first, buddy.
Now, the reason I bought you, I thought you might be interested in this, because this is muck that I use on my garden, and I think is the best muck in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's called digestate, and basically it's from these biomass plants, and they put in all this waste material, and they turn it, and the byproducts, the gas, which they sell, and they have this. Okay. So it's like a weed-free manure.
Yeah.
It's light. It's not too smelly.
Yeah.
And I buy it by the lorry load. I like it by a 40-ton load. It's £100 or something.
Yeah.
Just smell a bit of that, Eric. Just smell. What does it smell of to you?
Smells of earth.
It's a nice earthy smell, isn't it? And you crumble it. It's a nice
but
texture.
Even when you hold it, it's when you crunch it like that, it seems very soft and pure.
Yeah, it's nice to handle.
Yeah.
It is. You see, farmyard manure I did put on once, but then I got so many weeds.
Mm.
I think because it's weed free,
it's
very reasonably priced, so I think it's the best.
Yeah.
And I think it's really helpful when you're planting your trees in the hardcore. I would pickaxe them out, pop them in, and then add loads
and
of that on
that.
Top.
Yeah.
And that, if you can get some of that, I think it's
called
it's really nice. It's called digestate.
Digestate.
And it's got a pH of about 7, so it's getting on the alkaline side.
Okay.
It's a nice slow release fertilizer. It's a bit like all this stuff on your gut biome. They're saying now you don't really want to put artificial fertilizers on your soil because it boosts the growth artificially initially and then it slows back down. Whereas if you use these slow release organic things,
yeah,
it's a nice slow and it increases the microbes in the soil.
Yeah.
Just like all the food you have for your gut.
It sounds like it.
And then back onto your gut biome. Are you into your gut biome? I imagine your diet is second to none.
I try to be good with my diet. I'm not like super into the science too much behind it, I don't think. I try to just, you know, I try to eat as healthy as I can. And healthy to me is meat, fruit, vegetables, potatoes, everything that comes from the earth in the most natural form is what I would call healthy for me anyway.
So I bought you something else for your garden. talking about it's your
full
gut
of presents
biome
today.
Yeah, full of presents today, yeah. So I lifted these up. And these are, do you know what they are? I wonder if you do know what they are.
Ooh,
so I
there
can't,
you go.
There they are. There's one. Right, what do you think that is?
I have no, actually, I do know what that is, but I don't know the name of that.
It's a Jerusalem artichoke.
Ah.
And they are the easiest veg to grow. I thought, maybe not in your raised beds, because you don't perhaps need a raised bed.
Jerusalem artichoke.
But they are full of inulin, which is meant to be, you know, meant to increase your gut biome diversity.
Okay.
So it's one of the, because it produces the inulin.
Yeah.
And you pop them in the ground. So if I'll give you this bag and just pop them in about a foot apart, 300 mil apart, maybe 150 mil below the soil, and they will spread.
Wow.
And then they taste delicious if
just
you roast
the field.
Them. Well, in a bed
in a
or
bed.
in any board of weed free, and they have beautiful sort of sunflower type yellow flowers,
yeah,
and they're tall, but
they're a beautiful colour.
They are amazing. They do make you if your tendency to flatulence. I tell you, they are the biggest ones to stimulate that. But the more you eat, the less you fart because your body adapts to it.
Okay.
But they are delicious as well. I mean, I haven't given a very good selling point. But I do think they're amazing in soups, roast around a joint or whatever.
Yeah.
They are excellent and they're the easiest perennial veg to grow.
You've been giving me a lot of tips recently. You told Anna about the, was it the raspberry tea?
Raspberry leaf tea. So Anna's pregnant. And raspberry leaf tea is the most amazing thing for easy childbirth.
Yeah. I'll be giving it to her by the gallons.
But I overdid it with the second one, so you must, you came out too fast. But so they're brilliant. And I don't know what your favourite plants are in the garden. Have you got any favourites?
Yeah, I've got my favourites, but like I said to you, You know the I'm so bad with the names. The white bulb, big bulbs that I have in that garden there.
Alliums.
They come up quite high and they're on a single stem and then they.
White alliums.
White alliums.
Yes.
I love the white alliums. They're my favourite for sure.
So are you putting lots of bulbs in this autumn?
Well, this autumn, our main thing is what we're doing, hopefully next weekend. I'm trying to put together an army to plant our yew hedge.
Lovely, yes.
So my brother's coming for the weekend, and it's obviously an international break, so I've got the weekend to do a lot of planting. So yeah, the yew hedge and then some trees. So that's really our focus,
right.
And hopefully we can get it done that weekend, yeah.
Yeah, and I also bought you a couple more plants. I was just digging in the garden and had some spares, so I got use. And it's really nice to do that with gardens because you've got a big space like this.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll find you'll have, you know, in 10 years' time, you'll be giving to all your mates.
Yeah.
I bought you some Lirio Mascari, big blue, and it's a sort of this grassy thing. It's got these grassy leaves, has lovely big flowers. It's evergreen, and it stands about a foot high. And I thought by your sauna in that you could dot the land there.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it would look quite naturalistic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But also it has a presence through the winter, which is great with its grassy leaves.
Oh, that
and
is
also
nice.
Some violas, which again, they just spread. They have
spread,
a lovely
yeah.
little violet yeah. flower, and they're very, very easy. So I thought just a few more additions.
Yeah. Anna actually ordered some bulbs the other day to go in the orchard, but I can't remember what they were.
I always
there were
find,
lots
I
of
mean,
nice it, ones.
After Christmas, you can get some amazing bargains in January. All that's the tulips like. Are half price. Exactly. And it's a good time
it
to...
It was tulips, exactly, yeah. Tulip, she got three different types of tulips.
And they, the longer you leave them in, the more subject they are to a disease called fire blight. So I always think plant them late.
Okay.
Get them half price in the sales in January.
Lovely.
And then you just have to stop the squirrels going for them.
Yeah, the deer love the trees. That's our biggest enemy.
Yeah, you have to protect them against the deer, really. So in Portugal, is there anything you would grow in Portugal and eat, grow for yourself and eat, that you could grow here that we don't?
You know, I was actually going to ask you that today because we don't have any. We've never tried to grow it here. But in Portugal, they cook like everything with bay leaf.
Yeah.
They put bay leaf in everything. Everything they cook. And we've never, I don't know if you can grow it here or not.
Oh, yeah. Bay is dead easy. Next time I'll bring you a bay because they're dead easy from cutting because I've got lots.
Well, I would love to grow some bay leaf.
And they do make you, I think they make you slightly happier and things, don't they? I think bay is meant to do that.
Really?
I have loads of bay and we use a lot, but that is a really, really common herb. So
yeah,
it's
in
great.
Portugal, you're like, if someone brings you a rice dish, sometimes you'll find like a whole leaf just in the rice dish or
really
in
nice.
A meat stew or whatever it is. So that leaf is in everything they use in Portugal to cook.
Anything else that we wouldn't have heard of perhaps?
I don't think so. We spoke about cork oak trees the other day about planting some here, and they are everywhere in certain regions in Portugal, and they're incredibly beautiful. That's like, if I think of like one plant in Portugal or a tree, it would always be the cork oak tree, the first thing I would think of, because Sporting's Academy, where I lived, it was just surrounded by cork oak trees, and they would paint a number on the cork when they stripped the trunk.
Every 7 years.
So they know when they last stripped that trunk, and then it would grow out and they'll strip it again.
Yeah.
And you see that all over the Alentejo, which is a region in Portugal. You just see trees with a stripe of paint on them so that they know when to strip the cork next.
They're wonderful trees, and we've planted quite a few at Time Hotel, not so far from here, and I've got some at home, and I'm amazed how fast they grow.
Yeah.
And as a multi-stem, it's actually Quercus suba is the Latin name, and as a multi-stem, they look lovely.
Yeah.
So we should get some here. I think it's best to plant the very small, particularly, they seem to adapt to the climate, and I've never seen them scathed by frost. It amazed me. And
why do you always think you always say to grow to plant small? Why is that?
I remember years ago there was a famous tree person called Alan Mitchell, and he wrote an article on the difference between planting them large and planting them small. And for the Festival of Britain, they planted some tiny and they planted some big, and they found that the tiny ones caught up with the big ones in like 4 or 5 years, and they were much better shape.
Okay.
They're more natural shape, because when they transplant them at a big size, that is a massive shock.
Yeah.
And often they just have a different branch structure, a much closer together than if they'd naturally grown, because of this massive shock. But basically, you know, the roots, when you plant them tiny, you're cutting off the root hairs when you transplant them. But when they're tiny, they can adapt and they can get their roots out nicely. But when they're big, they've got this massive top to sustain from these roots that you've chopped off a lot. And so they suffer. So it just seems sort of, from the sustainability point of view, from the cost, from the look of the tree, if you can, that's the way I always go. And having done it at home, you know, I planted, there were no trees around our house, and it's been there since the 13th century, but it was a tenanted farm, I think that's why. And then I planted 1,000 trees in the first 2 weeks, tiny little things when I moved in, and now they're all on the OS map.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to see these sort of woodlands taking shape, and they just grow so fast. You know, you forget to check them every year, and you say, oh, they're above that roof, and oh, I can see them from here, and they as they zoom in size.
And we also spoke last time about the using trees and using that system of planting smaller ones and then taller ones to move the wind.
Yeah, shelter belts.
I was thinking about the shelter belts today and planting and planting here to try and stop this wind that we get coming across the house.
That makes so much. That's exactly why I did my 1,000, you see. So, yeah. And they lift and filter the wind, and you plant usually with a hedge on the outside, and then you get bigger and bigger. And they will lift and filter the wind 10 to 20 times the height of the tree.
It's incredible.
So my shelter belt, which I put in as, you know, a foot high, now they would be probably 15 meters high.
Yeah.
So they are lifting and filtering the wind about 45, 50 meters.
Yeah.
So when I jog up the drive and I hit the shelter belt, before the shelter belt comes in, I'm blown sideways on a windy day. And then when I hit the shelter belt, I'm, oh, wow, this is amazing. So they, I think we should do that. I think I would
love to do a shelter
belt
here.
Plant a bit there and really filter these winds. And so when your child is growing up, they'll be standing out here on a day like this. They'll hear the wind in the trees, but they won't feel
it
in their face.
Yeah. That's really nice. To hear it and not feel it is a lovely thing.
I love that, yeah. And because you're a very versatile player, and you're not at the front. What's it called? So you've got a longer career than many footballers.
I don't know. Obviously, it depends on my body. Hopefully, looking after my body
the
in the right way. The sauna,
sauna,
the ice bath, and the vegetables from the garden. Yeah, as long as I look after myself, I think I can play for a very long time. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, that's great. That's great. And I wonder if you will after. Will you turn to the land? Will you see yourself doing something?
Yeah, I think I'll be here. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I always think it's crazy to try and plan. I've learned it's crazy to try and plan ahead because it's impossible. But I could definitely imagine myself here. You know, we were speaking last couple of weeks ago about getting some Dexters. So when I have more time to dedicate to here, more animals, definitely more animals, and more gardening.
And just one last thing is Spotless is an app that you have with your brother.
Patrick.
So tell me about that. To me, that demonstrates you're a big foodie.
Yeah, I'm a big foodie. I think growing up in Portugal definitely had a huge impact on that because Portugal has incredible food, incredible fresh produce. They're incredibly proud of their food. So I think that obviously played a huge part in that.
So the app Spotless, I can go on it.
So
and
I think, the easiest way to explain it, which I think is it's trying to solve a problem which I think everyone has in their lives, where maybe today after this, you'll say to me, oh, Eric, where can we go and get some lunch in the area? Or where can we stay? Or lots of people, when they're going to Lisbon on holiday, they'll message me and say, oh, Eric, where should we stay? Where should we go for dinner? Where should we do this? Where should we do that? And I think that's a thing that happens in everyone's lives. Spotless is about digitalizing essentially that conversation and creating a platform where you can see all of my favorite places, whether it be in Lisbon, in this area, in Oxfordshire, wherever it might be in London, and you can see the places that I like to go. And if you're in that area and you're looking for somewhere, it's also a lot more of TripAdvisor or these types of platforms. The reviews, you don't know the people giving the reviews, so you don't know if you have the same taste as that person, if you like the same things as that person that is giving these reviews and giving this place 4 stars or 5 stars or 2 stars. Whereas with Spotless, it's about connecting with your friends on there and people you know. So you may know me and know my style and what I like and the types of restaurants that I might like, and therefore I feel like you have a much better idea of what you're going to encounter. If it's me or another friend who likes something different, you have a much more personal recommendation and a much much better idea of what that recommendation might be, considering the person that's given it.
It sounds really good. Well, Eric, it's been fabulous to chat. Thank you very, very much indeed.
My pleasure.
I'll go and give you these plants now.
Yes, okay. I'll plant now.
Great, thanks a lot.
Thank you.